Hello, my name is Robert Martiniano, Senior Program Manager at the Center for Health Workforce Studies at the University at Albany. I recently met with Mike Maveski of the Healthy Capital District Initiative and Linda Lacey of the South Carolina Office for Healthcare Workforce to discuss data collection efforts in order to conduct a community needs assessment.
So our first question for our speakers, what is the selection process for deciding which data elements to include in the analysis? And I'll start with Michael first on this.
Well, the first thing when we're doing a community needs assessment is to take a look at the target population and the population that you're going to be reviewing. So the best way of doing that is taking a look at the demographics of the community. And the best way of getting the demographics of the community is probably using the Bureau of Census information. What we try to do when we're describing the target population is kind of couch it to what assessment we're working on. We could do a comprehensive communities assessment, or it could be a program-specific assessment. And that would kind of guide us into what demographics we want to take a look at. But one of the things that you're doing when you're doing describing your target population is trying to get a handle on what is the high-risk population in your community. And you could do that by taking a look at the demographic, the social demographic characteristics, taking a look at population density, urban and rural, is that an issue? Age, gender, race, ethnicity, education level, language spoken at home, and poverty. You could take a look at those characteristics and have a fairly good idea as to your makeup of the population and perhaps what your high-risk population will be.
Mike, can you go a little further and talk about, you talked about community needs assessment, doing comprehensive needs assessment and targeted. Can you talk about how those work in terms of looking at health status and health outcome information?
Well, for example, I'm from New York State. So from New York State, every 4 to 5 years, we're required to, county health departments and hospitals are required to do a comprehensive needs assessment. So that's taking a look at your population. For the hospital, it would be their catchment area, and for the local health departments, it would be the county that they're serving. And you want to take a look at what health conditions are problematic for that particular community. There are also needs assessments that you would do that might be targeted based on a grant application. For example, if you are looking for getting asthma funds, you want to focus in on the asthma indicators in relationship to the population that you're serving. MCH or maternal and child health, you'd want to take a look at the birth certificates and birth outcomes related to that. So it really depends on the focus of the needs assessment. And a comprehensive needs assessment can be utilized for a focused needs assessment further down the pike. So it's always worthwhile to be able to generalize what the issues or problems are in your community.
Thank you. So, Linda, a lot of the work you've done has been around the health workforce and health professionals. So how do you identify data around the healthcare professionals and the healthcare system?
Well, we're very lucky in South Carolina to have a good data collection system that is linked in with our license renewal process for doctors, nurses, pharmacists, dentists, so that we know not only how many licensed people do we have, but how many are actually working and where are they working. So we can do a pretty detailed analysis of how many family medicine physicians are practicing in each county or even down to the zip code level. And that's very helpful in terms of really understanding what the local conditions are on the ground, depending on the geographic area that your needs assessment is focused on. We don't always have everything that we would like to have, and so recently I was able to use some membership association data on dietitians who are certified through their national association, and they were able to provide me, again, with some very detailed information about who was employed in our state and where, down to the zip code level.
So, Linda, you brought up something I want to expand upon a little. You talked about when data is available, you know, at what geographic level, and you gave the example of zip code. How does that impact on your ability to identify and collect data?
Well, not all data is available at every level of analysis that you would like, and it's easiest to find professions data, especially at the county level. There are several national sources like the Area Resource File or the NPI database, as well as license files, and the AMA master file. There's a bunch of these that generally can get you down to the county level. Not everything can be had at the zip code level, although if you have good information about where are people practicing, that usually includes a zip code. And we found that to be real important when we were doing our primary care needs assessment a few years ago, because we were creating our own market service areas, and they were based on zip code configurations. So it allowed us to really hone in on what areas of the state, maybe sitting right next to each other, seem to have very rich resources and which ones seem to have very poor resources.
Mike, I have a similar question for you. How do you, especially around health status and health outcome data, how do you use geographic areas to understand that data?
Well, I'm glad you raised this point, because one of the tips that I was going to say to mention is to try to get the information down as low a level as you can. And as Robert mentioned, I've worked for 35 years, so I've gone from where no data were available or data that were available were only at the state level to trying to get information at the county level and sub-county level. And I would emphasize that sub-county level is very important, especially for the urban counties, because there are pockets or neighborhoods of need that you want to identify for possible interventions in the future. So getting information at least at the county level and hopefully at the zip code or census tract level is very important to identify these neighborhoods. And it's also very important when you're trying to get community involvement. You can identify the population that you want to target to get such involvement. So for me, getting the data available at the sub-county level and making it available for our partners to use in their needs assessment is very important.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point, because when you think about upstate New York, you have urban counties that have vast rural areas. If you just looked at the county as a whole, you would miss that sub-county analysis, and you really do need to break it out. I want to go back to you, Mike. Are there specific indicators that you would tell people to collect around developing community needs assessment?
Well, to answer that question, I want to kind of step back a little bit and say, when we look at indicators, we want to look at indicators for a couple of areas. One is that we want the indicator to be fairly accurate. So when I look at different indicators, accuracy is important. The second piece is comparability. A lot of times when you're doing a needs assessment, you're comparing your county or your neighborhood against other counties or neighborhoods, or your state against other states. And so you want indicators that are comparable, that they collect it the same way, or that you're kind of comparing apples with apples. The third area that I look for an indicator is if it's collected over time or every so often, because what you want to try to do is monitor your indicators over time and see whether you're doing a better job or not, what the trend is in the indicator. So indicators, I'm looking for accuracy, I'm looking for comparability, I'm looking for whether it's collected over time. Now, the best way of identifying indicators, I would suggest to the general public, is see what other people are doing. See what the federal government is using or what the state is using as part of their public health indicators that they make available. Because usually
they have already gone through the process of trying to figure out which data sets are useful and which indicators are fairly accurate and comparable over time. So that would be my suggestion, is look for how other people, what indicators other people are using, and use those. The other reason is that if you're doing a community needs assessment, you don't want to collect the data yourself unless you have to. You want to use data that people have collected, whether the state has collected it or national sites such as the county health rankings or community commons. I think that is very important. You use data that other people have collected, that people have identified as useful indicators, and then incorporate those into the needs assessment.
Great. So, Linda, I'd actually like you to answer the same question.
Well, I think I agree with everything that Mike just had to say about reliability and validity and repeatability. All of that, I think, is critical. But I think maybe the first question to ask as you're trying to decide what sort of data to track down is, what is the focus of this needs assessment? How broad do you really need to be in order to get a good assessment for the purpose that you're after? Mike made a point earlier about how, you know, a generalized needs assessment can really be used for lots of different purposes, and then maybe you can drill down to answer specific questions. And I would say that's a lovely thing if you have the time and resources to do something as broad as that, because it takes a lot of time and effort to track down good data sources and then, you know, pull them into a database and manipulate them in the way that you need to. So I certainly don't want to poo-poo any of that, but I think it's important that you not underestimate the time and effort that's involved in securing and manipulating the data. So get focused at the very beginning as much as you can, and that, you know, means bringing in community stakeholders who can help you identify what is going to be most important. Can you repeat the question for me?
Robert? It was basically, what are the specific indicators you look for?
So, really, Mike mentioned, I think, the great majority of them. I would say that it's important to look at economic indicators. Again, it depends on what the focus of your study is, but certainly poverty and some of the other economic indicators like income and things like that, which are available in federal agencies, but that can be brought down to the county level, are important. I think sometimes there are some qualitative might be too strong a word here, but there are some indicators that I think are important, like what is the quality of the environment and how much does it differ within the area that you're looking at? So, safety, walkability, what sort of transportation is available? Because one of the issues that you usually end up trying to deal with is who has access to these resources that we've identified, and, you know, where are resources rich and where are they poor? And so some things that we don't often think about, like walkability and transportation, I think are things that people should also consider, in addition to all the things that Mike has already identified.
I mean, Linda, actually, that's a good point. I know when I was working with the North Country on doing data analysis, they actually had a provider survey that touched on to some of those issues rather than just the normal, you know, hospitalizations and ED visits and things. So I think it's always a combination.
Just let me add one more thing. So we have also been able to take advantage of billing data. So our state has, it's not quite an all-payer billing database, but it's pretty much everybody but those who pay their own bills. And that has been real useful for understanding a whole lot of very specific either disease states or access issues for a community needs assessment, which they don't publish that data, but we have been able to go to the folks that keep that database and say, you know, we're interested in looking at prenatal health, for instance, in this community. Can you, you know, share with us who's getting prenatal care and what do those folks look like and that sort of thing? So kind of an on-demand kind of data analytics.
I could chime in from New York State. I was going to mention social determinants of health, but I will get to that in a second. Now, I think that if I look back at how I would structure a community health assessment and what data sets are usually available to a practitioner, you have death certificates, you have hospitalization data, and you have emergency room or outpatient data. Those are fairly commonly available either from the state or even from the federal government. But you get into a point of provider access and what's happening in the primary care. And I think that's the gap that we're hoping to fill. You have the billing data. I know that New York State is working on an all-payer data set, but I'll wait and see when it's actually available. But I think that's the direction to go because, in essence, you know, if you take a look at the tip of the iceberg of deaths, you're only getting a certain piece of what's going on in the population, and then you go to hospitalization, and then you go to emergency room, and then primary care access. The other way that you can get around that is if you have access to the Medicaid data, you can get access to what's going on with the Medicaid population, and that you can get a little bit more clear as to what's happening at the primary care level. The other thing that's available is for the Medicare population is the Dartmouth Health Atlas, which takes a look at the Medicare population and similar indicators, the HEDIS indicators, for example, on how these populations are being served, are they being served appropriately, the quality of care for these services. So let me go back to social determinants of health because you raised a big issue. I know in New York State, this next cycle of our comprehensive needs assessment, the state is asking for a closer look at social determinants of health. And in the past, I would say these are softer data, but it's clearly information that needs to be looked at and reviewed along with the harder data. We've been trying to take a closer look at it, and I think that both the national level and some of the states level, they're making an active effort to try to get more social determinants of health. So we're talking about housing, insecurity, substandard housing, access to food, transportation issues, healthy neighborhoods, access to physical activity. All of those are haven't been collected that well, but there is an active effort to try to get that and to try to get that at the local neighborhood level. So I'm glad that, Linda, that you raised that because that's something that we're making an active attempt to try to do it. And I would put in a plus for Community Commons. Community Commons is a data site that has hundreds and hundreds of maps on social determinants of health along with other indicators that you could drill down to the zip code and census tract level. And that is a useful place to try to get some of these social determinant indicators for any needs assessment that you're undertaking.
Mike, you brought up an interesting point about 5 minutes ago. You were talking about primary access to primary care, and it made me think about a couple of data elements I'd love to look at. One is avoidable hospitalizations or preventable hospitalizations. You know, from my point of view, working with, you know, access to care and shortage designations, we try to understand what indicators would indicate lack of access. And again, the ones that I like are avoidable hospitalizations and also ED visits. Although ED visits can be too broad, you've got to kind of shrink that down to what's avoidable ED visits.
The PQIs.
Yes,
that
PQIs,
you're talking about.
Right.
We've been looking at PQIs. You guys are the experts in the health manpower, and I'm taking a look at the population and what indicators that the population will tell me about that has
that may raise issues about access to primary care. So you raised the good. Avoidable hospitalizations is basically a roll-up of all the prevention quality indicators that was generated, and we use that a lot. The other piece that you'd want to look at is screening. What's happening to screening, and you probably would get that from the behavior risk factors.
Yep.
Surveys. New York State has a county level. I know some of the other states have county level behavior risk factor stuff. CDC is now putting out information at the census tract level for 500 cities. So if you have live in a large city, you can get this information at the census tract level. But it's very useful to get cancer screening information that if you have poor screening rates, that probably would have an issue with access to primary care.
Linda, you wanted to add to this?
Well, just that we have used things like preventable hospitalizations or the number of hospitalizations that were primary care associated. And that's been really helpful to have. I think that we don't often reduce the numbers enough to make them really, really useful, and that's one way of doing that. Also, we used health indicator information to construct a little ratio of inequality, which got a pretty strong response. So, for instance, if you're looking at infant mortality, whites versus blacks, and you turn that into a ratio, where one is, you know, that blacks have a higher level of mortality than whites, it's really surprising sometimes what you see in your assessment once you've mapped it out, how much those inequalities bounce around.
Oh, also not only by race and ethnicity, but by poverty too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think I know one of the questions later on is going to be, so how do you package the results of a community needs assessment? You know, if you think about the purpose behind it, it's you're trying to present data to the decision makers for them to make informed decisions as to where they want to put their either efforts or their interventions. So I would my executive director and I always argue about how much data do you want to put out there. And do you put too much data out there so you overwhelm your audience?
Yeah.
Or do you want to put the wow factors, two or three different tidbits or bullets that try to get somebody's attention? So, Linda, you mentioned the race-ethnicity ratios. The black non-Hispanic population in my community has 7 times higher asthma rate than the white population in the community. I mean, that's really striking, and that would affect somebody. A maternal death. There is a mom who had died in my community. Why are moms still dying for maternal mortality? I mean, these are kind of the wow factors that you can raise. You know, a lot of times, you know, you can throw all the data out there, but you need to capture the public, either your population in the community or the executive director of your CBO or the health department coordinator. And sometimes that's the best way of doing it. And the taking a look at race ethnicity or taking a look at socioeconomic status is a great way of showing the inequity. And I think that brings more interest in the data.
Absolutely. We've had real success with that approach.
So we've talked about data in terms of identifying, and also woven into this discussion has been where the data is coming from. So we've talked about the census data for demographics. We've talked about state data for health outcomes, and we've talked about BRFIS, the Behavioral Risk Factor Survey for health status. And Linda, you even brought up about licensure data for on health professionals. Are there other data sets out there that you can think of that people might find useful?
Well, can I just put in a plug for
sure.
a short little compendium of federal data sources to support health workforce analysis? This was published in July 2017, and it's available on HRSA's website. And this is literally just that. It's a list of all the different data sources, and the different headings that they fall under. So it lists all of the ones that are available from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality and from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, from the Census Bureau, from the CDC, from Medicare and Medicaid. There are a couple of sources on child and adolescent health. HRSA has a number, of course, for different health professions. And then there's even some, like, educational statistics from the IPED system that gives you some useful information. And then there's also several data files available from SAMHSA around substance abuse and mental health services. So that's a really handy little report if people don't know about it.
But I think for that report, not everything's available at a sub-county level or even a sub-state level, so it can be an issue.
No, that's true. It's limited.
Yeah.
It is limited.
Mike, do you have ideas of other data sets?
Well, I could go an hour and a half on all the other data sets. I think my recommendation would be, one is to search your state. Let's go national first. So nationally, the Healthy People 2020 is a good source of information for a wide variety, but mostly at the national level. For getting information at the state level, you have the American Health Rankings or Kaiser Health Facts. Those could give you a lot of good information at the state level. March of Dimes has perinatal stats, so that would give you information on the maternal and child health population. For getting it at the county level, which is kind of what I'm suggesting, the lower the geographic level, the better use the data are. You have the county health rankings, the University of Wisconsin, Robert Wood Johnson, CDC. You also have, I mentioned before, Community Commons. All of those data are not only available at the state, but available at the county level. CDC is a great place for a lot of information that you can get. I mentioned that the Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance System, you can get that at the state level for CDC. But CDC has also published the 500 city series that gets you at the more local level. So those are the sites that I would go to try to get information at the different geographic levels. And there's a lot more. And then the other piece would be visit your state health department. Every single state health department is pushing local community needs assessments or the importance of doing community needs assessments. And search the site. Search what information is available. See if you can, if you have any questions, there are usually a contact. You can give a contact a call and ask a little bit more about that information. So those would be the places that I would go. Local health departments also may have unique data sets that maybe the state may not have.
You brought up a couple of interesting points. One of the things, the last community needs assessment we did at the county level, one of the indicators was alcohol-related deaths, car deaths. And one of the things I did was actually go to the New York State Traffic Bureau and actually got the other data by county, number of tickets, number of pedestrian accidents, things like that, to kind of enrich the story. I also did, New York State also has a school report card, so I could look at information by
School district.
By school district and by county.
Yep.
And interesting things like English as a second language, the percent of the school kids.
Free and reduced lunch.
Free and reduced lunches. So it starts really enriching the story.